Carol has been a member of the fellowship for 9 years. Starting out as a high school teacher, she then spent 31 years doing employment counseling and human resource work with the Federal Employment Service, much of that involving training and development. Somehow, she has remained busy ever since retiring, with her condo board, the Lifelong Learning Center, our fellowship, and frequent visits to Ireland, where her son and 3 grandchildren, Sean, Megan, and Connor, live. Carol has a master's degree in education. Thanks, Carol.
Well, it started innocently enough. Just 2 women chatting after a Unitarian Fellowship of Regina Sunday service. One remarks that she felt a little uncomfortable that during the candles of joy and concern, she lit a candle of concern and almost shed tears. The other says, "But I've done that many times, and this is a safe place for it." They then begin to speak of personal safe places, and the word sanctuary creeps in. "Wow, that could make an interesting subject for a presentation," they said, and I hope they were right. And of course, I was one of them. So here it is, the Sunday presentation on sanctuary. Like all presentations, and those of you who present know this, it began like this. And then it was like this. And now it's kind of about there. So I hope the length is right. When you hear the word sanctuary, do you think of the architecture of churches? Anybody? One, two, three. Of a religious space where frightened people can go and live with immunity from the law. Who thought of it in that way? More people. Of a protected space for birds, other animals, and plant species. Yes? Oh, maybe the most popular one. And, of course, of personal safe places, beliefs, or people. Which of these is a current description of sanctuary? Well, of course they all are. In the description of today's topic, I began with, the original meaning of sanctuary is a sacred place such as a shrine, and I'd like to talk about that first. Sanctuary is an old word, reaching back to about 950 BCE and the Hebrew temple in Jerusalem, where the Holy of Holies was the central sanctuary. It was in supposedly held the Ark of the Covenant. Later it was adopted by Christianity as well to describe the most sacred part of a religious building in which the altar is placed or where worship services are held. Churches, temples, synagogues, or mosques may be designated as sanctuaries in their entirety, or the sanctuary may be a consecrated area of a church or temple around its tabernacle or altar, often surrounded by railings. Apparently in the Anglican church, the area behind the railings is most often the sanctuary. Am I right, Ed? Now, I don't know about the past of this building, other than that it was occupied by the Church of Christ Scientist. Joanne, who did we buy this from? From them. If that is so, then this building is probably all considered to be sanctuary, as the place where worship services are held, because that's true of most Protestant faiths. Churches offering sanctuary. The word itself is derived from the Latin sanctuarium, which is a container for keeping something in, and in this case, something holy. and most often the relics of a saint to this day. When a new Roman Catholic church is consecrated for use, a box or sepulchrum containing the relics of a saint is placed in the altar. Being built on the site of a miracle, a martyrdom, or the burial of a holy person made a church or cathedral an especially sacred place. But in medieval times, churches were all deemed to be sanctuaries, that is, holy places where one could find refuge and protection with immunity from the laws of the land. Now, that premise was, and still is, that the church is above the law, or that God's law has supremacy over the laws of men and women. This struggle between church and state for supremacy was perhaps best illustrated in the conflict between King Henry II and Thomas Becket, the Archbishop of Canterbury. That struggle led to the murder of Becket in 1170 by four knights loyal to the king in the very cathedral over which he presided as archbishop, a horrific crime made even more so by the egregious breach of the concept of sanctuary. 935 years later, the concept of church sanctuary is still alive and functioning in some countries, including Germany, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Norway, Switzerland, Australia, the US, and Canada, notably not England or Wales, where King James I in 1623 made it illegal. In Canada, though, there have been over 50 cases in the past 30 years, more than I had thought, but not a lot in a period of 30 years. Two of the most recent anyway, right here in Regina, where sanctuary was sought and given in a church for two Nigerian international students, Victoria Ordu and Toma Amadi, for over 500 days. Now, I haven't been able to discover which church that was, and I'm hoping someone here will know. A Baptist church? They've kept that very, very quiet. It isn't available on the internet. You don't hear people talk about it. It's interesting. May have been. I don't know. Actually, church sanctuary is a controversial subject, with about 50% of Canadians in favor of it and 50% against. There are relatively few cases of church sanctuaries now, and partly because the doors to churches are locked when the building is not in use. Now, I have some feelings about that. I have feelings about almost everything. But I'd like to tell you a personal story about that. When I lived in Edmonton for a brief period of time, I lived in an apartment about two blocks away from a large Roman Catholic cathedral. I was only there, as I said, a short period of time because my husband and I were trying to piece together a shattered marriage, and I was struggling with what to do. When things got really uncomfortable and bad, I found the church around the corner where I could go at night. The doors were open. I could go in, I could sit at the back. It was huge. It was a cathedral, I think. And there were people coming in and leaving, lighting their candles. I'm sure there was a priest there taking confession somewhere, but the whole atmosphere there was so warm and calm, serene, and I could think clearly there. It didn't result in me becoming a Roman Catholic or a particularly religious person, but I found sanctuary there. It was my sanctuary. And I could think clearly enough to make decisions, partly as a result of that. And, of course, the decision I made was to get on a plane. another kind of sanctuary, though, and it's political. Political sanctuary is defined as immunity to arrest afforded by a sovereign authority, not the church in this case, but a head of state or representatives of the head of state. And you consider the cases of Julian Assange, still, I believe, in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, and Edward Snowden, still moving around Russia. I think he's in Moscow still at this point, seeking some form, some country in the EU to offer him political sanctuary. The United Nations has expanded the definition of political to include race, nationality, religion, political opinions and membership, and participation in any particular social group or social activities. And people who are seeking political sanctuary typically do so by asking a sovereign authority for asylum. There are humanitarian sanctuaries. I don't know what comes to your mind there, but refugee camps come to my mind. These are sources of help, relief, or comfort typically used by victims of war or disease. Animal and plant sanctuaries. Over time, the term was extended beyond religious institutions or political asylum to include any place of refuge or protection for humans or non-humans. There are animal sanctuaries where animals are brought to live and be protected for the rest of their lives, which is different from a shelter where the goal is to simply have the animal adopted and leave, but to bring an animal in for the rest of its life. And plant sanctuaries, areas set aside to maintain functioning natural ecosystems and to act as refuges for species. On a somewhat lighter note, one of my sources said, the term sanctuary has further come to be applied to any space set aside for private use in which others are not supposed to intrude, such as a man cave. So those are some examples of sanctuaries. And now you're going to hear the section called Carol's Comments. For one to seek sanctuary, there must be a real or perceived threat or a state of insecurity. For one to find sanctuary, there must be an accessible place, person, or belief system that can be trusted and is powerful enough to provide protection. The person, institution, place, belief offering sanctuary must have sufficient protective powers by reason of physical prowess or accepted societal norms, and be seen by the person seeking such protection as trustworthy. Power for any institution can only exist if the prevailing societal norms confer it on them. Christian churches can hardly be said to offer sanctuary in areas or countries where armed militants can enter and slaughter the people at will. A man cave is only a sanctuary if the rest of the family recognizes it as one. Accessible, powerful, and trustworthy. About fear and protection. I'd like to take a moment to talk about institutionalized or pervasive fear in societies. Some folks like me were children during the Cold War. Not so many. Who was a child during the Cold War? Oh, yeah, quite a few. We lived on a farm where above us the planes of the Strategic Air Command from the Minot military base flew every day, and we calculated the route from Minot to Alaska and found that we were on it. Remember what we were taught in school to do to protect ourselves in the event of a nuclear attack. Does anybody remember it? Duck and cover. Duck and cover. Hide under your desk. now I ask you, a patently ridiculous protective measure. Perhaps that's part of the reason I grew up quite skeptical of those offering safe places for me, but it was something, I suppose, better than nothing. There are millions of people today who live, for very good reason, in daily fear for their survival. But since 9/11, I've also seen a world in which fear is a fire fed by politicians or other leaders who then put themselves, their party, or their belief system forward as the safe place, the only one who can protect you from the terrorists. Sound familiar? Elections are won and lost around the world on this point. But enough about current events and Carol's comments. It's time for you to have a voice. So let's talk about your experiences, or possibly your observations even, about sanctuary. The who, what, when, and why. Have you found sanctuary in someone, some institution, some belief, some place? Have you offered sanctuary to someone else? And what are your thoughts about this? Ingrid?
I really like your topic.
Good.
I remember once there was a First Nations woman who was bleeding and frightened and running up my street, and it was almost dark, and I didn't know what she was running from. I couldn't see who or what she was running from. But she came up the side of my house between the houses, so I said, come in. And she was terrified to come in, so I mean, that was just hit me when you said, have you provided sanctuary for anyone? But I often remember that and wish I had insisted that she come in. But after a while, I kept watching to see if she was safe. And I don't know who she was or what happened to her. I think that the other important point I want to make is that I think wilderness is sanctuary that is absolutely essential to every human being and non-human, and that's so important for us to protect, I think, for many reasons, but I won't talk about it now.
Thank you. You like him better than me?
Yes.
Okay.
But just for a minute. I don't think this is really sanctuary, but we came to Canada because my son was getting of draft age, and the war in Vietnam was going on, and I just did not want him to face the decision of not, you know, resisting the draft. Canada had other meanings for us too, and especially later Saskatchewan, with the NDP having grown up here or been instrumental in the Health Care Act and all that sort of. Unfortunately, it's not the same Saskatchewan that we came to, but I still consider Canada to be more or less a sanctuary.
Thank you.
That's really not going to work. I'll move this way. I was thinking about, there's different ways maybe to provide sanctuary, so we don't have to be giving it within a space maybe, because during the Vietnam War I was part of a group in Calgary with Unitarians that would help people, draft dodgers, come into Canada, find them jobs and so on. And so we were helping them get to sanctuary, but the whole country was their sanctuary, and it was so simple. I can't actually imagine it happening today. I'm sure the government would find any number of reasons why a draft dodger couldn't come here. But probably. I was very happy to be part of that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. This really is a very interesting topic, and I didn't realize how many facets there really are and how important all of them are. I was thinking as you were speaking when you talked about duck and cover, and we were taught to hide under our desks in case of nuclear blast. But I was thinking how that was an illusion, that there was safety there. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking about today with the promotion of fear and government suggesting that we need all these militaristic things for safety. Even so, the kind of fear from terrorists, for example, the military things can't really do much about those things. And I thought, yeah, there's another illusion there. And it might get a lot of votes, though. Anyway, that's mm-hmm. just a comment.
Embassies should be safe places. And, of course, they are. They are viewed as sanctuaries by many folk. But then you remember Iran, the American embassy? If mob rule takes over, there really is no safe place, no sanctuary of that kind.
There's a really good programs within Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, to provide sanctuaries to children and mothers and wives that come with abuse every day of their lives. And that's a sanctuary that I feel is so important to all of us.
Transition houses.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot to make one point.
Yeah.
My mind's just sparking off. I also think there's sanctuary within when we meditate, or that's what I do. Once I should speak for myself. I meditate at least once a day, and I learned how to do transcendental mm-hmm. meditation. And I find that that is a sanctuary where I can let go of so much. And I think it saved me many times in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, all I've got to say is when I used to go to church just after my mother died, and tears used to stream down my cheeks when I was in the church, and I don't know whether it was sanctuary, but I found great comfort in that. It was just before I met my husband, so I had no brothers and sisters or anything like that. So I found great comfort in the church, and I remember there was so much crying and so forth that apparently I overheard in the middle of my tears coming down that the child had remarked that there's a lady crying.
Thank you, Carol. To come back to your idea of sanctuary, the inner self, and so on. And but there's another one for me, and the other one is my neighbor, my love, my life, and she's my partner. And I don't mean to say I was in trouble with the law and so on. Anyway, I was never caught by anybody at the time. I was running too fast. But the fact that I met the person who was going to be the love of my life, and she was definitely, or she is still, my sanctuary. And the fact that she was Canadian was a double pleasure, because at the time, and I won't tell you who was prime minister at the time, he used to do pirouettes And Canada, for a long time, coming from France, was a sanctuary with regard to openness, peace of mind. Obviously, if you're First Nation, that would have been quite different. And if you were poor and so on, that could have been a lot different. Or even a woman battered, that could have been a lot different. But to the eyes of the world and to any immigrants, which I was at the time, was definitely the place where things would be peaceful. And thank you, my love.
What we all seem to be saying in one way or another is that sanctuary is a place that can be a physical space, or it can be your feeling in your body where you feel safe.
Thank you. So, Sally, a safe place for you?
So much talk about bullying. Where do these people that are bullied get sanctuary?
An excellent question. Would anybody like to try to answer it? Where do people who are being bullied find sanctuary?
I saw, I guess, a very hopeful thing. I was in just a cafe or something, and this huge guy comes in, and he has this pink shirt on saying, bullying is enough. So bullying is at an end, or enough of bullying
enough
or something.
So there are people who do provide sanctuary, families, and sometimes the teachers in this room might have an opinion on that issue of bullying and sanctuary. Do you?
I teach grade 1 and 2, and I think it's hard to say that there is one space as a sanctuary for kids, but it's what are the processes that we have in place sometimes with the kids, that they have an open ways of communication with either other supervisors or teachers, that they have safe people to go to, and that there's people looking out for them. In my own classroom, I so often talk about, you know, that we need to help each other, and that if you see, you know, even if it's somebody you don't like in your class, it's still important that we stand up for each other. And yeah, so it's not really a place, of course, but it's either the processes or the people around us that need to be the sanctuary in that situation.
Thank you. Any other comments? Sandra? It's okay. I'm on this.
Yeah, I think that having institutionalized places of sanctuary, for example, unions provide some form of sanctuary against bullying in the workplace, although not between members of the union, only between administration and the workers. But I know in schools, for example, the school has to be providing this as a way of thinking, so that a teacher who knows about this, or a parent, or a child, they will get a hearing in the institution. And I know that years ago it used to be, if you intervene, it will just get worse. And I think that that actually did happen. And I think it happened because there wasn't an overall ethic of acceptance and refusal to accept this kind of behavior. So I really like to support institutionalizing rules, regulations, and really the building of an ethic that is, okay, we may not like somebody, but that doesn't mean we get to bully them. So,
thank you.
You mentioned embassies as a place of sanctuary. This is a little bit of a ridiculous statement, but, you know, often governments are overthrown, which is not a nice thing. But the president of Bolivia, Morales, said that the government of the U.S. will never be overthrown. And his reason was there's no U.S. embassy in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Well, I think some of you are being very modest. I'm sure everyone here has offered sanctuary to somebody at some time. We've all taken in the person who comes to the door, or the child who's homeless, living on the streets, and we'll do something for them. We're all sanctuary to somebody if there is love in your relationship and trust, which is why I said that sanctuary had three aspects to it: accessibility and the power to offer protection, and trustworthiness. So why did I say at the very beginning that this place is a safe place? I expect it. You find it a safe place. I'm sure you do. Well, my feelings about that are that here I find what I believe to be genuine caring and warmth and trustworthiness. Who just said we stand up for each other? Oh, yes. I believe we stand up for each other. We have a commitment to common principles. And sometimes I can just lose myself in this beautiful sanctuary here and the lovely music that goes with it. So I hope for all of you that you have a place you can go to when you're feeling insecure or frightened. And I hope that that place is a person. It can be a belief system. It can be anything. It can be the wilderness. It can be buildings, parks, whatever. Hope you all have that. And if you haven't, you better go find one. We all need to be safe at some time. Thank you.